Hey, everybody, it's Ben Decker here with the Modern Spirituality Show, and I'm super excited to have my friend with me. His name is Anthony Mindel. And he's a legend. Some of you know I was an actor back in the day in a past life and also in a current life, technically, secretly, in the closet. But when I first moved to Los Angeles when I was 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, all I wanted to do was study with Anthony Mindel. He's a legendary acting coach. He's a filmmaker. He's an author and an activist and a really, really brilliant, creative, multifaceted person. Shout out to Jolie Kurtzinger, who introduced me. Thanks for being here, Anthony. I'm so stoked you're here, Tony.
Thanks, Ben. And dreams come true. It just took you 20 years. Although you technically haven't been taught by me yet, but you have been to the school. But, you know,
Right. That's
the beautiful thing, I guess, about having a dream. Sometimes I think people give up on their dreams because they take longer. The shelf life, you know, seems to have expired and it takes longer. We're just jumping in. Mm-hmm. I think it takes longer sometimes than we realize. But it takes a little bit longer.
It's so true. Things have their own germination period. You know, and it's so interesting because I wanted so badly to show up on the scene as a young, cute little 18-year-old twink and just like immediately be like the next Justin Timberlake or whatever, you know, that's like what the vision was. Right. And Hollywood didn't receive me that way. You know, I was received, but in a different way. And I was taken in and Los Angeles has raised me in a lot of ways. It is interesting how, having that subtle intention over time, cause now I have years later, now that I'm not trying to make acting a career, now I have recently, taken, like you mentioned, acting classes at your school, which I really got a lot out of, by the way, and I'm 100% coming back. That's like my favorite thing to do now. I'm like, oh geez, I need to get an acting class in.
Yeah. I think it's like, it's a practice, right? And I think just like any kind of creative endeavor, it takes a little bit longer than we think. And, you know, it's like your time versus God's time or whatever word we want to use. Or my therapist has a really great saying that I love. You know, she's like, when you have an idea, you have an epiphany or an intuition or just a dream of something, a vision, it happens instantaneously. But then the actual of it playing out, like if you want to go to Paris, the idea is instantaneous, but Paris time is a whole different thing because you have to like book the ticket and you got to get the reservation and you got to go to the airport. And it's a really great example of like, oh, even if I did all that fast in a day, it's still going to take at least a day and a half to get there, right? Unless I'm private, which I don't advocate because of, you know, me and my climate work. But anyway, I think it's important to remember that it takes sometimes, doesn't mean your dream isn't working for you if it just isn't showing up instantaneously, right? And you know, I don't know what the thrust is with all of your guests on your show, and I'm open to talking about anything, but like in my own personal experience, I feel like, and you as well, right? Because you've had such a circuitous route and have come to other things in such a creative and, I don't know, revelatory way. And so things are always working out for us in ways that we can't imagine if you say yes to it or stay open to it. So I think that's a big learning curve that I think we struggle, human beings first, foremost, and artists second, in linearity. And the life processes and the artistic process isn't a linear process. 1 + 2 doesn't equal 3. Doing this plus that doesn't equal that, right? And so you have to always create space for, I don't know, the X factor and all these other variables at play coming into fruition. Linearity is the death of creativity. One of the deaths.
Well, that's true. There's a lot of things that can kill a boner. You know, a lot of things that can kill
create a boner. Yeah.
You know, and, you know, so, okay. So I want to look at that for a second though, because what do you think is like the key within that space of having like the dream and the vision, like we're in ADHD reality. Like, how are we ever going to follow through on anything, you know, and what's your relationship to, the idea within acting I remember what was the goal when I was a little kid. As soon as I learned what an Oscar was, I was like, that's the goal. Right, you know right. what I mean? And little did I know, it's like literally the highest, most challenging, you know, thing that someone could do, yeah. you know, it's like when I learned about what the UN was, I was like, oh, I want to be the Secretary General of the United Nations. And right. I'm like, oh, wait, that's like the highest government position on the planet. Oops.
It's good. You aim high.
A little ambitious, you know. But what do you think about that? Like, I guess the question that I'm feeling into is around a long-term goal or a vision we have for our lives. And, you know, you're an acting coach, so you have a lot of people who want to become a star or want to star in something really strong. Do you have something where you help people, like, identify metrics of success?
Yeah, you know, I think there are certain like measuring tools or signposts along the way that I think a lot of actors kind of, it's a checklist. But I was going to say the thing that pops into my mind, it just came to me, is like the three P's. I don't know, I'm going to like trademark this, but like persistence, practice, and paradigm shift. I think like that's like just what I got, right? Which is, I think people oftentimes underestimate again how long something takes. Again, when we look at like, and maybe because of our TikTok influence generation now, you were kind of commenting on how everything is instantaneous, and then we think that because I can get a million hits overnight, I can get that in a career, that it actually just doesn't work out that way, right? And I think that a career in any kind of arts, you get better as you practice. It's like the 10,000 hour rule. So I think a lot of times people give up when they don't see the sort of, I don't know what our sort of measurements of success are, but I am always saying, like, I think that is a paradigm shift. Like, what is success? Like, everybody, your listeners, myself included, have had milestones of success. And then you realize like, well, wait, it's a changing, that finish line is always changing. There's no finite finish line, because you get there and then you're like, well, wait, this wasn't it. Or you make a lot of money and then you're like, well, this isn't fulfilling an inner calling or desire or alignment that is speaking to me, right? I think this is the conundrum of being alive always, is that we're so outerly focused that when we reach those milestones, we think we've made it. And then you're like, oh no, it's just a new beginning at a different level.
Okay, so do you feel like there's ever a time when you can look at your life and say, you know what? Actually, objectively, I have made it.
No, I don't know what that means.
Okay.
What does that mean?
Exactly. So I look at your life.
He's made it.
And and look, you've got, I mean, I'm a teacher. I'm a meditation teacher. It's a lot of work to have a school.
It is a lot of work.
It's a lot of work to have a school. You have a school in, am I going to get this right? Like 8 locations?
So we had 10 post-COVID, let's say 8 right now. Yeah.
8 locations,
yeah.
You know, and you've been around, and I think that you founded, was it
26 years ago?
26 years ago.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like that 26 years of anything, which, I mean, first of all, congratulations that you even were able to stay focused enough to have something that survived 26 years. I don't know if I even have it in me. I have a touch of the tiz, you know what I mean? Like I'm like a little, it's not really my, you know? So, I mean, just seeing someone like you and even, I mean, I've created some content here and there, but you know, the idea of creating a film, for me, it still exists within that realm of something I've never actually done. I kind of felt that way about writing a book before I was hired by a publisher and paid to write a book, you know, and then another one, another one, another one. And I mean, that was really exciting for me, you know. But when I see you've got all these books that you've written, you've got all of these students that you've helped and supported and ushered into these really meaningful roles. You have connections to so much of what's happening within the entertainment industry. You're so intimately aware of what's happening in so many different ways. I look at your life and I just say, like, wow, that's a successful person who has created a lot of really tangible quality work, you know?
Thanks, Ben.
I feel like you have made it.
Yeah, I guess like the word making it, like I don't ever, you know, sit back and be like, oh, wow, look at what I've done. Because I think, you know, it's always changing. For me, it's always kind of evolving and turning into something else. And I think, again, I think these are traps for people because I think it's an outer accoutrement that's put on us, but it's still, I don't like the end result of making it doesn't, it isn't, that doesn't fulfill me in here. What fulfills me in here is talking to you about things that are like we're passionate about or creating. Or so to me, it's more active staying in something as opposed to, again, a finish line, if that makes any sense. Right. I mean, maybe when I'm 80, I did good this time. I don't know, I'm always doing my fake cigarette here. I need a prop cigarette. But I don't know. I also feel like when I look at people who have made it and then their lives take a, you know, a radical detour or something falls apart or, you know, as the spiritual teacher Pema Chodron talks about, like life is all about things come together and things fall apart. And those things don't mean that you're a failure, you haven't succeeded, you're not making it, you haven't made it, you haven't made an impact. I think when we stay more in alignment with the flux of the real flow of life, I think we set ourselves up for a more joyous kind of journey. Because I think these sort of cultural signposts are set and fixed, and I don't think they're very healthy. Because my point was, is my dad lost his business. He had a business for 26 years, 25 years, 20 years, something like that, and very successful. And then in the 80s, when big corporations came in and started, the mom and pop stores started getting gobbled up. It was the beginning of what we see now. Everything is gigantic, right? Like the mega store. It was the beginning of that time. And he lost his business that he worked really hard on. And, you know, he made it, but then his life completely fell apart. But when I look at my dad now, I don't even think of any of, I don't really track that stuff. I just see kind of just what an amazing journey he has had being who he is and coming to America and going for his dream. And even if the dream didn't work out the way he thought, like, so I don't know. I try to stay away from cultural flashpoints. Because I think culture is deranged. There, I just said it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's go there. It's just deranged. It's completely toxic. And listen, I'm a complete optimist. Don't get me wrong. I really believe in the power. Oh, look, I cry a lot too. I feel it. I really feel in the power of community and service, of spirit. And I think, but those are principles that are the outliers. We are living in a very capitalist structured system based on something that's never, well, it's worked for some people, but it's not worked for most, right? And I think then when we break that down, I think, again, with social media nowadays, that's heightening it. I just think it's a very toxic, I think culture is toxic. And also it's designed for people to just follow along mindlessly. Every company, from the biggest tech companies, and I'm not a conspiracist. I enjoy and indulge in these companies. I buy at Amazon. I watch Netflix. I'm not on TikTok, but I am on Instagram, whatever. So I am I'm a part of the, you know, the fuck uppery of this. But I also can see how they don't want me to be a free thinking person, because if I were more free thinking, I wouldn't be on their sites. I'd be free thinking, doing more of my own thing.
Right.
I think it, and also the addiction code that's built into that also works against our own ability to like get off that thing and think for ourselves or create for ourselves. So I don't know. I think it's an interesting time. Ben, what are your thoughts about that?
Well, I think it's really interesting that you bring up the way we sort of are absorbed into social media, social culture, digital culture. It reminds me of Terrence McKenna, something that
yes. if you're, yes.
Something Terrence McKenna used to say is culture is your operating system, you know, and you think about like if an app is, you know, operating within the context of an operating system, there's certain things it can do and certain things it can't do, you know. So if we're operating within a dominant culture, we're inheriting all of the conflict it's like a generational curse. Like we talk about generational curses and generational inheritances, spiritually or psychologically, or, you know, we talk about intergenerational trauma, or even like past life karma, all of those things where it's essentially wherever you got it, whether it's a past life, an ancestor, or whatever, wherever you got it, the theory behind that is this idea of stepping into a situation and there already being conflict. That you right now, as you were, did not cause. And you've inherited a side on that conflict, you know, and it's true in many, many different ways. We inherit, like, we're parts of all these different communities, and we inherit, you know, and are adopted into, like, these existing dynamics that are at play. And so many of the things that we're absorbed into, it's like like you said, it is designed to sort of like pull our attention magnetically, you know, physiologically, so much so that it's like feels almost like unheard of or unusual to go do something that is genuinely free thinking.
That's right.
You know, and it's not a conspiracy. It's just typical free market capitalism where you're like, look, I want to do everything I possibly can to get people in on my product.
Right.
And on my thing that I'm doing, you know, and it's like the difference between someone whose end goal, or a corporation or organization whose end goal is maximum profit, versus an end goal being supporting someone or helping someone or solving a certain kind of problem. You know?
Well, also, yes, I think all that's true. But I also think, like, the capitalist ideal, and again, I'm not, you know, I think it's fascinating that this idea of profits constantly, you know, every year, the board, you have to, you know, your board of directors, that they all have to be, you know, appeased, because it has to show that the company is continuing to make money. But I think, again, when we look at the foundations of nature, something can't keep growing in excess. It's I think it's like entropy, if it's the entropy principle, I could be wrong, but if things must collapse and then come together again. And this whole idea of constantly amassing. And I also feel like, so that's also a betrayal or counter to how life itself is moving constantly, right? And I also think, as you and I have talked a lot about this, and I'm really passionate and I'm active in the climate space, I'm working on a climate movie right now. Like, I also think a lot of these things can be traced back to our complete disconnect from nature. And we're it's been a long boil, good but terrible reference. It's a long boil of us realizing, like, oh, wow, our divorcing ourselves from the thing that we are nature. And nature isn't about taking more than it needs. So I think, and our own, you know, when I look at human beings, I struggle with this, because again, you are one, and I feel like I'm doing important work and good work, but boy, oh boy, Homo sapiens have ravaged the planet. And, you know, there were other hominid species. Neanderthal man was around the same time. They're all gone. Like, you know, why are they all gone? You know, we've led to the extinction of so many other species, animal species. And so I don't know. I find it really interesting, confounding, perplexing, heartbreaking. And then also, when I'm really maybe in a meditative space, in terms of like the evolution of what comes next, maybe it's all been unfolding perfectly and as it should. Mm-hmm. And that is not in any way to mitigate the suffering that so many people have endured. But it's the system that's been inherited, like you said, for centuries. And maybe, you know, so I don't know. I think, like, in terms of climate, like, everything will eventually collapse. Then the planet will regenerate, and maybe the whole cycle is supposed to start again. And maybe that's what we've been living. Mm-hmm. Maybe you and I have lived that at a different time over and over again, you know? Mm-hmm. So I don't know. That's how my mind works in terms of all these big issues, if you will.
Well, I think it's really interesting that you say it comes down to disconnection from nature, you know?
Yeah, we are nature.
We are nature, exactly. And I think it's really interesting, the release that I got from returning to acting, and sort of what I remembered from when I was a kid that drew me right into acting, made it feel natural for me, that gave me release as a kid, was was surrendering into like this embodied exploration of something within a safe context.
And this is totally it. You know what I'm thinking right now? I've never said this before, but art to me isn't better than the secular, but art is like an exaltation or a celebration of nature, of spirit, of the sacred, right? And so that's why, to me, art, when we hear the word art, sometimes people who are not artists or are struggling in their art, or myself, I'm not talking about like pretentious art. I'm just talking about like life itself is art. When you start, you know, curiosity is art, playing, creating, writing, singing, dancing, like, you know, but I think like we've lost the connection. See, all these things to me are connected. We've lost the connection to the fluidity of art. Because if you're an artist, you're not going to want to spill toxic sludge into a river that, you know, is is your muse for creating. It's such a disconnect. So I don't know, but it's beautiful to think in those terms. And that is why what you just said, when you feel the exaltation of being in class or writing a poem or whatever, whatever your listeners, how they get tapped into, I think that is, we're tapping into our supernal selves, our God selves, our nature selves, right?
Right.
The sacred.
Well, yeah. And in the Judeo-Christian traditions, you know, in the book of Genesis, there's the first ever quality and the first ever action of the divine is creativity. You know, the first action is in the beginning, God created.
That's right. Creation itself. Yeah.
So yeah, like creativity is the divine.
And the birthing experience is called procreation, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think. Yeah, I think again, then this comes back to like, I am not anti-commercialist. I want people to make money and have a good life and be able to pay the bills, right? But this friction, and also I think this is what makes it interesting, this friction between creativity and art versus commerce. And I think it's been going, I mean, Shakespeare was railing against his producers all the time, like, give me money, even though he had like, you know, he's already done 12 plays that were hugely successful. And he was constantly, I want to put up, you know, All's Well That Ends Well, give me money. And they're like, no, it doesn't make any money. You know what I mean? Like, so this has been going on since time began of like the commerce, the bankers trying to oversee and control creativity. And we need that aspect of it, I guess, in a.
Okay. I have a question. I have a question about that. So this obviously brings me right into like the modern day entertainment industry, because we are talking about artists and performers.
Yeah.
And we know about the exploitation of artists. Jeanette McCurdy recently came out with her memoir where she said, I'm glad my mother died. She was a Nickelodeon star. I heard Christy Carlson Romano on a podcast recently talking about, you know, Nickelodeon and Disney and you know what it's like to be a child worker in those contexts, or what their experiences were. We've seen so much over the years, and this is not. And right now we're witnessing a writer strike. This is not our first strike. You know,
yeah.
Not our first writer strike. What do you think about? What are your thoughts on what's happening right now with all of that?
I mean, I think I read somewhere yesterday that I think the union for actors, SAG-AFTRA, they're petitioning to strike, because that's coming up. Our contracts are coming up next month, right? And then the DGA, the Directors Guild, it's also coming up. So there may be three unions that are going to be striking. And look, I think like anything, I think what gave you that idea, obviously, we were talking about Shakespeare's time, right? And so like, the producers at that time are the equivalent of the streamers nowadays. They're making billions and billions of dollars. And I think ultimately it's just about equitable pay and not cutting out, you know, the workforce that is needed to create. I think the thing to me, I was talking to an executive yesterday, and that gets me really frustrated, is I think the streamers, they want to game the system because they think they can do things without having artists. And it is so, again, this speaks to something I'm so passionate about and I'm always advocating for. Like, without art, what are we? It's not a data-driven business, although that's what it's becoming. It's all about a logarithm and what works. And then we recapitulate that and reformulate that, or not even reformulate it. Let's just redo that. So we just get more people who are, and I'm not judging people because I watch it as well, but we just are all asleep at the wheel and watching the thing that we've seen 1,000 times because, oh, it's a new, they're remaking it. I'm right. So it's right. Quite dumbed down in a way. And again, I'm not, I am subject to it and watch it. And I'm like, oh, that's really good. Or maybe not.
Right.
But
right.
I think
I just watched Disney's Beauty and the Beast.
I will withhold comments. I loved it.
Yeah.
Loved you mean it. The original, or did they remake it?
No, I watched the animated original.
Oh, wow. Oh, the original. Okay. Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
and I was like, this is like really weird cultural programming. Side note, I was like,
oh yeah,
such.
Well, there's that too.
I know. I mean, was like, whoa. I was like, dude, Belle, don't fall in love with him. But I also think she played him to break the curse. I think she played him.
Okay. Well, I don't know. That's like,
I'm just kidding.
Especially way back then, and even now, I'm not sure women were, you know, are kind of given the emancipation that they're still striving for, right? To be free thinking individuals that can govern, have governance over their own body and mind and spirit. I mean, it's so right. crazy. So I think, again, all these things are so connected. I love this conversation, but I think that's the thing is I think the streamers, I think the fact that there is beautiful art that comes out of streaming is an outlier. It just kind of happens, but I don't think that's their mandate. I don't think their goal is, yes, let's make beautiful art. I think it's about let's churn and burn and create as much content as we can that makes a shit ton of money. We get mm-hmm. a lot of eyeballs on it. And the less amount of artistic input, the better, because then we don't have to pay artists. So yeah,
that's
kind of, yeah, it is intense, but I think we see that everywhere. We see that in terms of like customer care or things being more AI driven or customer service in certain businesses has really fallen apart. Or I don't think it's really about the connective aspect so much. It's so driven by analytics and dollars and data.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the beautiful thing about that though, Ben, is I feel like even though we're it's such a like interesting zenith of this moment, I also think it creates a reaction in another way. So it means there is a need for more connective art. There is a need for, you and I have talked about this, I want to see and feel things that move me and express the human condition that I'm grappling with. I don't want to just be asleep. I don't. Mm-hmm. I really don't. And I'm not mostly. My life isn't all together or anything, but I'm striving to be a part of things that wake me up or challenge me or scare me. I don't want to be asleep to my own life.
Right. I mean, I feel that way too. When there's a great film that really can speak like a work of art, you know, and there's something magical about it. There's something very shamanic, you know. In shamanism, we talk a lot about
absolutely
dream walking, the shamanic state of consciousness, going to other realms, you know. And I think that there's something extremely healing. We've spoken about this.
We have, yeah.
And really cathartic, you know. When I was in your acting class, well, when I was in Summer's acting class at your school.
Yay, Summer. She's amazing.
Yay, Summer. Yeah, it was amazing. I had a great experience. And my partner, I was sort of like overworked and busy and overscheduled managing my life, but also I kind of let my acting partner kind of choose the scene. I was like, is the one you feel strongly about? She was like, this one looks good. And I was like, cool. Didn't even look at it, agreed to do it, was like, right. I'm here for the exercise, whatever. I didn't really have a chance to look at them. And so I just sort of trusted the process, went in and ended up getting so much out of that scene.
Mm.
You know, it was, I was playing a cancer patient on his deathbed in a hospital. And he was having a conversation with a former lover who's now married with kids with another partner. And he was basically kind of saying his final goodbyes and kind of saying in his life, you were the love of my life,
mm.
you know, and just sort of like stepping into that experience of saying goodbye to an entire lifetime, looking back on an entire lifetime, being in a space to be able to say, you really were the love of my life. For me, it was you, you know, and I know that it's not the same for you, but, you know, to go into that experience was so shamanic. It was a huge healing, a huge transmission.
I think that the real art of acting that we just sometimes don't realize or forget, it's just the art of empathy, right? So you're living in the shoes of quote unquote another character as yourself in these circumstances and meeting these very human parts of you. And right. And when we do, we're contending with our own death or our own disease or our own love or our own people who've trespassed against us or our own rejections, all of it. Like it's the 10,000 things. Right. And I think culturally, this is also speaks to the heart of the empath is to me how to live one's life, right? And I think where our culture specifically is heading, it feels very unempathetic. It feels there is like, again, I think because social media has given permission to people to troll and to be haters on there and to say horrible things about people they don't even know. And I think, you know, whether your listeners likes Trump or not, there is absolutely, you know, the research has shown the Trump effect has had, you know, there are longstanding ramifications, I think, in terms of how people, given people permission to be unempathetic. And I think this is why we are in such a disconnect, that we can't find some sort of middle ground of like, at the end of the day, you're a human being and I'm a human being. And we just want, what do we want? We want to be seen. We want to be heard. We want to feel safe. We want to, you know what I mean? Not live in fear, be at peace. We all have the same kind of core desires. And some people with certain agendas feel like if they do that thing, they will fulfill those deep-seated yearnings. They may not even realize that's what it is. But I think that is, right? So this is why I always say, I'm going to go to Congress and teach everybody how to act. Because if they would be petrified, can you imagine these congressmen and women? They would be, I would have them in tears because they would have to look opposite their enemy and really take in another human being.
Right.
And so the power of acting to me is really sacred. It's, you know, it's the oldest profession next to like, you know what, so it says something right there. It's, yeah, I think
that's really interesting.
It's has it, it. I mean, I think the thing about, you know, obviously prostitution or whatever you want to call it, sexual expression that people paid for. It was a desire to connect and be sexual, which is another form of intimacy or whatever. And acting to me is also why it's been around for so long. It is a way to reveal back to human beings the human condition. And it's the heart of empathy, I think. So I'm going to go to Congress. Mr. Smith goes to Washington. Mr. Mindel goes to Washington.
I mean, now's the time with Marianne Williamson running for president. I mean, now is like a vortex of, look, the mainstream media can ignore Marianne Williamson all they want. The reality is her message is resonating with a certain population, especially Gen Z. She is going super viral on TikTok. There are people who already have higher consciousness ideals, and she's putting a political voice to them. So all she's doing is applying these higher consciousness ideals in a political context, giving the option of authentically politically expressing them. And so it's really interesting to see, like, especially in a post-COVID world, where it's like so many people are just pretty much tired of the bullshit. You know, it's like, I think that's also where these strikes are coming from. Cause it's not just the entertainment industry. I recently picked up someone at the airport and I saw all these pilots standing
striking.
And they said, prepared to strike. They're holding signs that said, prepared to strike, prepared to strike, prepared to strike, prepared to strike. And it's just like, this is such a contentious time, but also I think a time that's really ripe for a lot of meaningful, transformation, you know, a lot of meaningful opportunity, but it it will require like a very significant act of peace across a very thoroughly established root system of a divide in consciousness. You know, it's almost like there's, you know, there's this indigenous song that sings about the four directions, the four colors, the four medicines, mm-hmm. and the four races. Mm-hmm. And there's a black medicine, a red medicine, a yellow medicine, and a white medicine. And they're associated also with the four, what they call the four races. Mm-hmm. So black, red, yellow, and white. Mm-hmm. And there's a theory that says that those four races sprouted up from distant parts of the world at the same time, from different families and different like animal groups and all of that. But that our older ancestors were all one, you know, one cluster or one community. And the idea of the four colors and the four medicines is that the four medicines would have to come together to create the medicine, to create a medicine wheel, you know. Mm-hmm. And you know, and there's this concept of this, of a rainbow prophecy, where there would be warriors of the rainbow whose assignment was essentially to bridge the gaps between different traditions and different communities. And I think acting seems to be, you know, you can watch a movie or watch a really meaningful film, even a short film, and have a genuinely moving experience from it. You can, and I think that actors sort of serve a real actor who is really in their role, in the right moment and in the right place, you know, at their best, is really like a doula, you know, sort of facilitating someone through an experience. And as filmmakers, you're sort of like the, you know, facilitating the entire ritual scene and the entire buildup and the context and all of the messaging. And I think that's what's really interesting about intentional entertainment. I don't need it to be preachy. We see through that. We don't like forced preachy, even if we agree with the message. Mm-hmm. It leaves a taste in our mouth. It feels like you're not being honest with us. Mm-hmm. And you don't fucking lie to me as an audience member. Mm-hmm. You know, like when we're watching something, I wanna feel so in on what's happening. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's the magic of it. We get these intimate moments, and we saw what he just did under the table that no one else in the room just saw. Like, that's part of the magic of being in the audience. So I don't, and I feel like your work isn't preachy. I feel like it is intimate. I feel like it is intimate.
Oh, jeez. Yeah.
But I see, like, for example, I don't want to speak negatively of something that I basically agree with, but I really liked something that came out, and I watched every episode of it, and I thought it was done really well in a lot of different ways, but I also felt like it was really preachy. Mm-hmm. And
I think I know what you're talking about. We'll talk after the show.
Yeah. I mean, I don't need to say it because I don't mean to say a negative thing about it, but
yeah, no, of course.
But I did feel like, give me more credit as an audience member. Mm-hmm. You know, and I feel your work has done that.
Yeah, nobody wants to be either. I think it just falls into two categories. Nobody wants to be preached at, because either A, we already get it and we're already trying to, you know, accomplish that or incorporate that into our lives. And then those people who are receiving it aren't at that level to receive it anyway. So it's like, you know, it's just kind of a waste of programming, I think. I was just going to say, like, too, one last thing about the streamers and about like this disconnect is, like, I think really what it is, Ben, is, you know, just the people that are on the ground doing the work, like, the writers, let's say, you know, there are so many like writers that are not the famous writers, that are staff writers. And, you know, they're like the frontline writers. They're the frontline workers of creating content for streamers that are making lots of money, and they're not really being compensated justly. And I don't think the guild is asking for something that's unreasonable. I think it's also about when you see that people aren't being able to like pay their bills, but by their, hopefully their dream job, And yet the CEOs of companies are getting severance packages and making like billions and billions of dollars. It's just this like, do you really need that much money? Can't just some of that, you know what I mean? I think it's, right. It's just equitableness, if that's the word. So I don't know. I don't run a huge
corporation. Equitability, maybe?
Equitability, yeah.
Maybe?
Yeah. So, I don't know. I think, I'm sure they're going to...
It's just fairness, you know? Yeah. I think it's just regular old fairness. I'm not anti-capitalist. That's something that I also have heard Marianne Williamson say. I've really appreciated some of the things that she's... the way she's articulated things, because I also don't feel anti-capitalist. I like the idea of capitalism where you can pretty much kind of do whatever you want. And I think for the most part, people don't want to do predatory things. I feel like for the most part, they don't want that. So this idea of capitalism with a conscience.
Well, some companies are doing that. Patagonia is one example of it. Ben and Jerry's, there's a lot of, it's not an S corp, it's an E corp, or I don't know the letter that is there's a new corporate designation in which they are no longer fiscally responsible or beholden to their board of directors. So it's not about quarterly sales for them. They are putting their money back into a community, back into nature, back into the environment. And there's an actual name for it. We can find it. But
it's not a B Corp?
It's a B Corp. Sorry.
Is it a B Corp? Yeah, that's right.
So there's a lot of corporations, well, not a lot, but there are some trailblazers that are doing that. And I think I just think these models have to be rethought. Mm-hmm. Why do we just keep blindly,
It's because some people have gamed certain systems and they're not about to let you change the rules.
That's right. You're right.
Yeah. They're not giving up.
That would mean they get a little bit less and somebody maybe gets just a little bit more, but yeah.
And so, yeah, I mean, that's the thing is like when you're talking to, I recently met somebody from a really wealthy family. He's really wealthy, and he's young too, in his 20s, makes a lot of money, like millions of dollars, you know, works on Wall Street and is worth hundreds of millions of dollars. Like is a very successful person.
Is he single?
I'm just kidding. Maybe. But I was talking to him and I really noticed that there were a lot of things that really surprised me about his general philosophy about life, you know? And it was really interesting. And I have worked with billionaires and multimillionaires, and there really is with people who have a shitload of actual money, in the hundreds of millions plus, there really is this desire to make more, all the money, you know?
Yes.
And there's something there where it's like, no, they don't want to be worth 100 million. They want to be worth 900 trillion.
Well, I was just reading about this the other day. Yes. Because they also become victims of their own habituation of the thing that they did, they have to keep doing. And I also think this goes back to the, have you ever heard of the happiness set point? And in terms of, I think there's two points I want to make about this. Like the happiness set point is a sociological test that they've done where everybody has pretty much their own homeostasis for happiness, right? And you can win $1 million or you can get married or you get your TV show or whatever. And then after that, you know, surprise and beautiful celebration after how long it takes or 3 months or 18 months or however long you're in that celebratory thing, your happiness set point kind of goes back to its original sort of place of how you move through the world in joy, right? And I think part of that is programmed by the outer. And then I think we can fix our joy set point by tuning into more of the inner. But I think that also, so that's one thing that I think is interesting. So that the people that we think are the haves, they also default back to, it's as if you had $50,000, somebody has $500 million. The happiness set point might very well be the same, right? Obviously, having more money makes life a little bit easier, but it doesn't change our inner
makeup. It's like once you pass that initial survival threshold where everything's there and it's there in a consistent way, the range is very minimal, you know?
Yes, that's right. That's right. But also I was going to say, Ben, and I was reading yesterday too. I just forgot what it is. Oh, that I think that the challenge with somebody who's making that kind of money, even though this writer was talking about, they're never going to be able to spend all of it, which is, it's like hard to get my head around that. But also
right.
In making that much money, what was the thought? Sorry, I just... it's going to come to me. Sorry. Just was there when I was explaining it. That they're worried about the same things that you are based on money. So it goes to show you that money is such an interesting, we think of it as a finite thing, but that's also always moving. I mean, think about the word currency, right? It's like it's an energetic thing, but if you mm-hmm. have $100,000 and you're constantly worrying about, I have enough, but I don't have enough to buy a house. And like this same guy who has 500 million, his worries and stressors are as relative as yours, even though he's got 10 times more money. So it's, mm-hmm. it's really, so again, it doesn't solve the problem. It comes back to how we started this talk, right? I think the problems of life or the challenges of life cannot be solved through the outer, because it's not an outer experience, is only a part of it, right? And right. And how do we find places where we can cultivate the inner and move that into the outer to maybe change the outer more, to be more aligned with the outer? You know, I think it's interesting in the spiritual world, because whenever I look on Instagram, there's like, you know, buzzwords that are used, but I often find what does that even mean? How does that help someone?
Tell me about it.
I don't know. I should have been more prepared. I never prepare anything, but mm-hmm. I don't know. Help me. I don't know when
boundaries.
I read some. Yeah. Boundaries is a good one, because
manifestation.
That's real... Yeah. Great. Just be centered.
Toxic relationships.
Be centered to manifest. What does that mean? How does that really help
right.
someone? And even some of the things that I'm talking about that might start to be, you know, conceptual, how does that help somebody who's working at a supermarket and is barely making enough to put food on the table? So mm-hmm. I'm also mm-hmm. always, we have to be very cognizant of, you know, sort of who we're talking to and at what level we're, you know, financially we're talking about some of these things. I think sometimes the spiritual community forgets that most people are living on 70% of the world's population is living on $1 a day. Mm. I don't, mm-hmm. for whatever reason, I was born into this incarnation as Tony and have lived a very blessed and privileged life. But had I been born 20 years prior or 20 years after, you and I wouldn't even be here having this conversation. I wouldn't even know who you are. So it's divine and it's beautiful and it's perfect. But for me to even be contemplating some of these things are really champagne contemplations. They're really mm-hmm. privileged contemplations, mm-hmm. because I know when I go to South Africa or India, most people are not thinking about how do I manifest? and right. I'm not in any way saying that it isn't still a real thing. I know you travel all over the world and the world itself, like you said, the word creation, how do we have our hands in the molding clay of creating our lives, right? But it certainly gets a little bit easier if you're a trust fund baby, which I'm not.
Exactly.
But
I saw a meme that said, maybe you manifested it. Maybe it's white privilege. It's like literally take responsibility on this other level. It's like, how spiritual do you really want to be? Something...
Yeah.
I'm like clearly obsessed with Marianne Williamson. She says, I'm happy for you. If you didn't know that you can manifest whatever you want, I'm happy for you. If you just learned that, because that's good. If you didn't know that, but that's not the spiritual mountaintop. You know, it's like, yeah, that's part of what's baked in the cake. You know, the law of attraction, the law of karma. There are a few other laws that are part of like the universal experience, you know, and they're there for sure. They exist and they're part of it, but it doesn't mean enlightenment, you know.
Mm,
and sometimes
that's right.
I found a lot of people when we're successful, a lot of people in that space, that's when the ego gets its like opportunity. To really do its thing that it's best at, which is make us look like an idiot. Mm. When you have everything that you need, that's when you feel the need to tell other people what to do, or take control over a situation where you think that you're entitled to some kind of control.
Well, also, like, this, piggybacking on what she was saying about it isn't the mountaintop, because we've been talking throughout this podcast today that, like, the outer thing doesn't make us happy. Like, it is something that we're here to experience. We're here to experience all kinds of things, including wealth and marriage and love and success, whatever. But it's, again, the outer isn't the mountaintop, right? And for me, when I'm talking about these things, when I think about being in the West or living in America, as opposed to maybe in a previous lifetime or in a lifetime to come, I'm born somewhere else where, I don't know, I find it really interesting to think about, well, maybe this is part of why I'm here. How do I learn how to work with the material wealth that we in the West are given that then doesn't corrupt the inner stuff, having to cultivate, I don't know, or is living from a different place. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Well, I see it like this. I see it like we are animals.
Yeah.
We are animals who, and the generations before us built all kinds of nests, you know, AKA cities and buildings. And we inherited all kinds of structuring and infrastructure from the animals that came before us that are our parental, you know, communities. And we're playing out nature. We're playing out the violence and the hunt of nature through the new context of finances, weapons, social structures, slavery, legalized bribery, legalized slavery. You know, we have a whole system of international legalized slavery by declaring certain nations slave nations and being able to have children there work for 10 cents. But it's legal for us to import those textiles or whatever, but it's not legal for us to have American children working, you know, like that. You know, it's a legalized exploitation, aka legalized slavery. And so you look at all of that and it's like, okay, well, would a tiger do that? If a tiger had all that, maybe, I don't fucking know. Because the thing is, if we're desperate and we're really scared of our survival, it's going to reflect out, like you said, it's going to reflect out in our sphere of influence proportionately to what our resources are and the expanse of our resources, you know? So it's like, I see it as people who are not thinking about the well-being of the collective, who have mass amounts of money, who have ulterior agendas and ulterior motives. They're basically just regular animals that have, you know, this great enormous power because we as a society have granted them such power collectively, and they have it, baby. You know, it's not going anywhere. We bow to the financial trade big time collectively, you know, and it's like they're playing out what a lion would do to a gazelle, only through all their tools and all their powers and all of the stories that they're believing within there, you know. And it's like the awakening becomes humanity. You know, theoretically, you know, in Buddhism, the awakening is when we go from our monkey mind or our animal nature into an enlightened spiritual nature. I was raised Christian, and we always talked about overcoming the natural man. The natural man being sort of our automatic, greedy, violent, competitive, fear-based nature, and cultivating the spiritual qualities, being born again and being reborn a new kind of person, a spiritual person who doesn't do those things. You know what I mean? So it's like, okay, well, we're playing out exactly what all of the religions have shown us. And we're also pretty much playing out exactly what's happening with like super predators in nature. We're essentially like hyper predatory over territory. Even amongst ourselves, like you see different animals fighting for territory amongst themselves. We want that territory, baby.
Homo sapiens have extincted many, many other species, right? So it kind of comes back to, I don't know. I find this all really, as you were talking, I was like, oh, it's so fascinating. And also all just, it's all sound and fury and it means nothing at the end of the day, right? Like we're here right. having a very weird, bizarre, beautiful, messy, fucked up human experience. And it's, I think sometimes I can only speak for my own spiritual journey. Like we come up with rationalizations, or I do, because I can't really, it doesn't gel with the suffering that I see in other parts of the world. So if I come up with a really clever manifestation thing, it can make me feel better about my existence while not really addressing how much suffering is in the world, you know? So I don't know. It's very complex, Ben. It's really, I don't know. It's part of, I think I love having conversations about it, but also knowing that nobody knows, because if anybody knew, we would all.
Well, that's what's so nice about art and philosophy is their explorations of different ideas. So what do you have coming up? How can we all find you? You've got books, you've got films.
Yeah.
You've got classes.
I mean, if anybody wants to check out a really cool studio, I mean, depending on where they live, anywhere, I'm sure you go everywhere in the world. So at a city near you, Anthony Mindel's Actor Workshop, and you can find us, you know, you can find me online and on Instagram at Anthony Mindel, or the studios at AMAW Studios, you know, on our website, AnthonyMindel.com. And yeah, so that's for people who may want to, oh, I really want to, after their conversation, want to maybe take an acting class. I want to learn how to public speak better or just be more in touch with my feelings. And I have a number of books. I think the book that is my newest book that is in alignment with a lot of these things we were talking about is called Unstuck, and it just came out. And it's really about helping artists get out of their own way and unstuck themselves. Because I think that's part of the problem that artists face, is they overthink that which they just don't need to, right? Nobody knows is my big philosophy about all of it. Nobody knows. At some level, it's all made up. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and that can be very freeing once you realize, like, well, if nobody knows, I must know at least as much as nobody else. So, you know, that's a great way of remembering it. So yeah, you could check out my books are all on Amazon.
I'll put all the links in the show notes. So,
okay, great.
So we've got everything there.
Yeah.
And yeah, I love Unstuck. And what would your, just in closing, what would your big tip be for us to get unstuck?
I think the big tip to get unstuck is, if you have a really great idea, mm-hmm. then you have to find a way to move out into the world with it and not get caught up in, when things fall apart, it doesn't mean that thing is still not supposed to happen.
Right.
I think sometimes people interpret, oh, well, that just fell apart, so that must mean like God is not on my side, or the universe is against me, or somebody's throwing like rocks from outer space telling me this is never going to happen. No, it just, conflict is a part of the matrix of, it doesn't mean there's something wrong. It just means conflict resolution is a part of what we have to get through to be on a planet full of conflict, which is what you were talking about earlier. It's learning how to not interpret it as a negative, but actually within that, there's a solution to every problem. That's the beautiful thing about life. There is a solution to every problem. If only everybody would just like realize it. And maybe that's part of solution finding, waking people. See, everything that we're talking about is circles, which is so cool to me, right?
Right.
You know, to restore the planet, plant medicine. To restore the planet, nature. To restore the planet, it's already in nature. To find healing medicinals, there's so much unexplored in the natural world that I'm sorry, I just wanted to make this last point. Like, pharmaceuticals think that they can outsmart nature. Human beings think that they can outsmart the very thing that birthed them. And yet the solutions for everything is within the thing that we are. And that also speaks to the individual level. You have your answers for yourself. I have mine. And it takes bravery and courage to listen to that.
Well done. Thank you so much. I've got to have you on again.
Oh, really? Okay, cool. Did I pass?
Oh, you have
that was really great.
You have actor audition trauma. I get it. I get it. You need to know how you did.
No, I mean, I always am like, good. Is that okay?
You yeah. got the job.
Okay.
You got
all right. the
job. Yay. Okay, let's do it again. All right. Love you, bro.
Thanks, Ben.
Hey, it's Ben Decker, and I just have to thank you again for listening to the Modern Spirituality Podcast. For information on anything mentioned here, you can check out the show notes below. You can also get in touch with me via twitter.com/BenDecker, instagram.com/BenjaminWDecker, or email me at BenDecker@ModernSpiritualityPodcast.com. It really does mean so much to me that you're here with me on the modern spirituality journey. I'm genuinely super excited about what I've got planned for these next few episodes. So really make sure to subscribe to the Modern Spirituality Podcast so you can get in on what I've got coming up. And if this is resonating for you, if anything here helped or inspired or entertained you at all, please, please do rate this podcast and leave me a review. It means so much more than you might realize. So from the bottom of my heart, thank you, thank you, thank you, and thank you again.